Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mealer. Really pleased to welcome back to the microphone Mark Dwyer. Mark is the landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. We're going to be talking with him today, zeroing in on vertical growing and edible ornamentals. Great to have him with us. You may have some questions about this. Do you have multi-purpose plants that really add to your garden appeal? How do you make the most out of your garden space? Those are things that we're going to be talking about with Mark, and I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you have some photos to share as well. I see we have a nice photo from Blue Fortune Farm up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mealer Show right now, along with a question. You can do that too. Just go to the Larry Mealer Show. If you have a question that you'd like to phone in about, you can call us at 1-800-642-1234. And, of course, you can always email us at talk@wpr.org. Mark Dwyer with us by phone today. Hi, Mark. Thanks for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be on your show, as always.
Well, it's great to have you here. When we think about gardening, we usually sort of picture, I think, a horizontal landscape. But for tight spaces, we can go vertical as well, can't we?
Well, absolutely. I think too many people feel limited by a lack of space, or as they look down at in two dimensions, as we look down at the ground surface and envision putting plants here and there, I think it's important that people realize that we garden in three dimensions. And if you're lacking space horizontally, why not garden up? Or even garden down and maximize, again, narrow spaces, or sometimes called skinny spaces, and again maximize those locations.
And you do some of that at the Rotary Gardens.
Well, we've been doing more and more. We have some very very tight borders around our building where we've incorporated a lot of vertical elements. We're growing lots of vines, and we're also incorporating some brand new types of containers that not only maximize a narrow space, but also provide a growing opportunity in areas where there's no traditional soil. The idea that we can have all sorts of vertical containers in areas where there's existing pavement or bricks. And when I think of the homeowner or an apartment dweller, the idea that your balcony can be a viable place to grow vegetables and ornamentals as well. So, again, this vertical gardening is, while it's not a new concept, I think it's something that people often overlook as an opportunity.
And when you're talking about containers, kind of new containers, what could you give us an example or two?
Sure. Well, there's a couple. You know, I hate to endorse trade names, but I'll mention a couple I know by name. There's some stack containers called monkey pots, which are a three-tiered system of plastic containers that allow you to grow a lot of different vegetables in a small amount of space. If you were growing them traditionally out in the garden, you would need, say, 40 square feet, a good size area to grow the same vegetables. But in the stacked tiered container system, the silhouette of this container as you look down on it from above is minimal. It's only taking up 6 square feet. But again, this tiered system of monkey pots allows, again, the opportunity to grow a lot of vertical plants and maximize your space again. We've made a lot of custom-made designs here at the gardens that maximize not only the vertical applications, but are also all accessible. They're elevated enough that not only are they in a tight spot, but they provide a no-stoop gardening opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, for some of us who are getting older, we're able to garden a little easier at waist level, and we're also building containers for all accessibility, wheelchair accessibility, and so on and so on. So lots of opportunities.
And the cool thing is, as people visit the gardens, they can see those in action.
Oh, absolutely. And this year, in our ornamental edible garden, we're going to include 7 or 8 different ideas for vertical gardening, including very narrow containers, all the different options I've just mentioned. And our intent is to show people what they can do, not only in a tight amount of space, but how they can incorporate plants that also look beautiful, but have that secondary use in the kitchen as a vegetable or an herb.
Yeah, that's great. What are some of the great ornamentals that are also edible?
Well, what screams to me first when you ask that, Larry, is ornamental hot peppers. And I shouldn't call them ornamental hot peppers, because all hot peppers are edible to a certain degree, although many are developed for fancy foliage, whether it's very dark foliage or variegated foliage. But when you think of hot peppers ripening on the plant from midsummer towards October, those ripening fruits are what offer the ornamentation. I myself am a vegan, so I do a lot of vegetarian and vegan type growing at home, lots of vegetables. And I grow a lot of Swiss chard, which is a great green that'll do very well through the summer.
Cool.
Lots of different colors. And when I say colors, the leaves themselves are only about 18 inches high, but you can select different colors that have venation or petiole ornamentation in the oranges and pinks and reds. And it's a great vegetable and very healthy. So those are two of just many examples.
Jim in Rock Spring has a question or comment. Let's go there. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I've planted flowering kale, and sometimes it grows close to the ground, and sometimes it's got a longer stem, and it grows more upward. And I've seen that happen with cabbage, too. What causes that, prompts that plant to grow a longer stem?
Well, if you're planting these in spring, and we do a lot of kale here, a lot of cabbages, and cabbage is a huge family with many, many varieties. So my first inclination is to say it might be a variety type issue, because we have some ornamental cabbages here that will grow that will get 3, 4, almost 5 feet tall throughout the course of the summer. But
wow.
Many of those that we plant later in the season just won't gain the height. So I wonder if it's a variety issue. Are you seeing height variability with the same variety?
Well, like the cabbages, they should be growing closer to the ground, but they're kind of growing up off the ground. And
mm-hmm.
and you kind of just hit and miss whether it's the kale's growing close to the ground or it's got the longer stem, too, yeah.
Right. And that might be a soil condition as well. There's a lot of inputs into our kale here in terms of very rich soil and lots of watering. And with a long growing season and a hot summer, again, we're gaining a lot of height from kale that's planted in late May.
Okay.
And by the end of September, again, we have some monstrous height. So, I think it might be a variety thing. I wouldn't be discouraged by it, but it sounds like that variability is an issue for you.
Yeah, sounds that way. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Jim, for calling. Good luck. Appreciate it. Tom in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. How are you doing today, sir?
Great. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, this spring, I'm looking at planting some cherry trees and some blueberry bushes, and I was just wanting some input on that, if you could, please. But then the other thing that I'm really interested in is I was looking into some peach trees, and I know those are normally kind of a southern thing, but someone was telling me about a Reliant or something, some kind of a peach tree that could grow in Wisconsin, and I was just wondering your thoughts on any of those.
Mm-hmm.
Well, great question. I would start by saying I would encourage you to contact your local extension agents on some of these fruiting plants, because, again, it's an issue of hardiness. And you mentioned the peach, which down in Janesville here, we have a couple of our volunteers that are growing peach trees. And they're doing okay, not huge crops or anything, but you mentioned the Reliance peach, which is supposedly a hardy variety to zone 5. Again, I would do a little more research into proper location for something like that. Cherries, I would look into making sure they're self-pollinating, because some of the cherries require a pollinator, so it's very variety-dependent, and there's all sorts of different types of cherries, bush cherries, taller cherry trees, those that are both sweet, some that are tart, so a little more research into cherries, I think, would be important. Blueberries are tricky. They need very acidic soil. And even if you grow them well, you have to compete with the birds, which is another issue. So I again feel that your best route would be to talk to people who've grown these and really investigate the extension resources on how to do the best with these, because everything you've mentioned we have very little of here at the garden for a lot of the reasons I've mentioned in terms of hardiness and pest problems.
That's a good, good thing, a good idea. And you can contact the Extension office directly, or go online to the Learning Store, UW Extension Learning Store. There's a lot of publications, bulletins on many of the things that you mentioned today, Tom, and they're free online. So take a look at that and see what you can come up with. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Jackie in Ingleside, Illinois, up next with a comment or question. Let's go there. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. I have a comment that goes back to a comment before from your guest, and that is regarding gardening in apartment buildings.
Yeah.
This is a little takeoff on that, but I thought you might find it interesting. I, about 2 months ago, read in an email from the Center for Biological Diversity about an architect in, I think it was Hong Kong, who had created an apartment building where, it was terraced, and the terraces and the outside porches all had places for trees to grow and other kinds of shrubs and flowers so that they could attract wildlife up in the sky. I looked at it and I thought, oh, my God. And much to everyone's surprise, it was phenomenally a success. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful look at, wow, how human beings can do so many different things if we put our mind to it. And that was to bring wildlife to a city that was becoming pretty sterile in terms of green. Mm. So that's my comment.
Oh, thanks for calling. Mark, comment from you.
I think that's great. What's nice to hear is that engineering has really caught up to our combined interest with gardening. And not only do we see a lot of green roofs and opportunities with new buildings, as this lady mentioned, there's also a lot of momentum with this living wall type approach, particularly over in Europe, the idea of being able to plant plants literally along the facade of a wall. And what these plants do is not only look beautiful and soften the landscape, as they would on an apartment deck or anywhere in an urban situation, but they also remediate a lot of rainwater issues. They help filter pollutants, as all our plants do. And again, what a neat thing to hear, and I hope this is a progress in the right direction in giving people that taste of nature, even if they are in a dwelling where they don't have traditional land space, per se.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate your call very much. Talking about going around and taking a look at gardens and seeing what people are doing, in early July, I will be leading a group of Wisconsin Public Radio listeners to London, England, to tour some English gardens. And we're also going to attend the Hampton Court Flower Show. And we'll visit some of England's great churches and houses along with the gardens. This is going to be a lot of fun. We'll see the cathedrals at Leeds and Canterbury, and we'll visit the famous White Garden of Avita Sackville West and Bateman's House, which was Kipling's wooded retreat. Plus, we're going to spend an entire day exploring the grounds and exhibits at the Hampton Court Flower Show. I'm really looking forward to that. It's the world's largest show, and it's run by the Royal Horticultural Society. And these are just a few of the highlights. We're going to get a private tour of the Secret Gardens of London and partnering with Earthbound Expeditions for this trip. They work with public radio stations across the country. In fact, they worked with us when we set up our Earthbound trip last year for our festive winter waltz tour of Budapest, Vienna, and Prague. And people had just a wonderful time. Small group of people, I think it's about 30 is the max that they allow. And I'm hoping you will consider joining us for this trip. It's a great way to meet other Wisconsin Public Radio listeners and spend a little time with me. It's a 9-day trip, I think, leave July 1st, come back on the 9th. We'll have a great travel adventure together with a small group, but a fun group. I'm very sure of that. And if you want to find out some more, just go to wpr.org/travel. And I haven't talked about it before. I was actually saving talking about it for Garden Talk because I thought, well, you know, people listening to Garden Talk might be interested in attending the Hampton Court Flower Show and all these other fun things. So that is July 1st. We're leaving, but since it's a small group, I would encourage you to look into it fairly quickly because I think things might go fast. Have you ever had a chance to visit England and see the gardens over there? Mark?
I have not, although we're leading a tour to the Netherlands from Rotary Gardens in April, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, man. I tell you, it's so much fun to do these things, and I'm I'm really looking forward. It's my first time doing something like this, so I'm really looking forward to spending time with the with our Wisconsin Public Radio listeners. And actually, I should mention one other thing. We have, this relates to our show coming up on Monday, as long as we're talking about other things here. Monday, we're going to be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Henry Vilas Zoo here in Madison. And the zoo's executive director and the director of animal handler will be here from 11 to 11:45. And they're going to bring a guest of the non-human variety. So they're bringing an animal along. So I want to have a little fun with this. So here's the deal. Go to our Facebook page and guess what animal they may be bringing with them on Monday. And please do it as a comment to the status that Judith has posted. There's a status posted with a big question mark as the picture. So do your guess there. Don't clog the page up too much for people looking for information. And if there's more than one correct answer, we'll do a random drawing for a great prize. And again, go to our Facebook page, guess what animal they may be bringing with them. And please do it as a comment to the status that Judith posted with a big question mark as the picture, so we don't clog up the page too much. And if there's more than one correct answer, we'll do a random drawing for a great prize. And you can post your guesses until midnight on Sunday to be entered for the drawing. So you got the drawing and travel to England with me. For that, just go to WPR.org/travel. You can do that as well. Larry Mueller here. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're zeroing in a little bit on vertical growing and edible ornamentals. Our guest, Mark Dwyer, landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Great to have him with us, and thank you for listening in. Call us with your questions at 1-800-642-1234, or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Katie in Eau Claire has been waiting a while, so let's go to Katie. Hi, Katie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is that vertical gardening sounds great, but I have cats and kids, and I was a little concerned about that. So I was wondering if you had any suggestions or specific containers that would work well or stand up to that kind of abuse.
Oh, great, great question. The idea of cats and kids and other things that might affect the containers, because, and I understand the concern, because there's the issue of making sure the plants are healthy, but you also want a stable container as well that's not prone to tipping over or having issues. I have many cats myself, so I understand those challenges. Again, it's one of the, I think placement's very important, and in an outdoor situation, limiting access. With cats, it's very difficult if they're out and about outside. Access is something that's hard to deny to just about anything. A vertical gardening or an elevated planter would keep something like rabbits away, but as we know, cats have the have a little more easier access. I don't have a real good answer for you in terms of keeping the cats away. I know the kids, it's a little more keeping an eye on them and making sure they know what's off limits, but boy, you've got me stumped on that.
Maybe somebody else listening in has some advice and has had something that they've tried and worked.
Thank you very much.
All right, stay listening, Kathy. Katie, we'll maybe get some more comments here. Susie in Springfield, Illinois. Hi to you.
Hi, how are you guys today?
Great, thank you for calling.
Great. I met you at the Rotary Gardens booth at the Garden Expo I came to. That was a great event, so Larry, kudos to you guys for that. I have a question about vertical gardening indoors. I've seen the Woolly Pockets and other comparable apparatus to create wall gardens, and I think it would be a beautiful piece of art as well as a living structure. However, I can't find any type of container to go on a wall that does not have problems with mold. Do you know of any for indoor use for a living wall?
Right. That's a great comment on mold issues, because you think of something adhered to an interior wall that has soil and water and moisture issues.
Mm-hmm.
All those devices have backings to keep moisture away from the wall. However, there's the issue of drainage and where does the surplus water go. To answer your question directly, I don't have a specific recommendation on those that would be less mold-prone, because that's also a factor of air circulation and humidity and some other elements. And at the gardens here, we're starting to trial some of these different pocket-like apparatuses, like you've indicated, these wall-type pockets, because the engineering and securing them is vital. But again, that mold issue I could see would be a potential problem. Hopefully in a couple of years we'll have a feel on what works better, but I keep going back to air circulation being absolutely vital, and the drainage issues with these containers have to be perfect. And
I think I might be able to figure that out if you move it away from the wall a little bit and maybe put some kind of plastic behind it and make a cup under the bottom. But I do have a second question, if I may.
Sure.
Do you know any material that you can use to make your own wall-type pockets? Because the commercial ones are made from specialized fabrics or recycled fabrics.
Right. Well, it's interesting you mentioned that. I did a talk at the Expo on vertical gardening, and I mentioned I've seen where people have used those shoe pockets that you hang on the backside of your door.
Right.
And have inserted plants into those, and those are already ready to go. The issue with weight is a problem, you know, wet soil and plants, and also the drainage issues we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those are ready to go, and the examples I showed had vegetables and all sorts of trailing plants coming out of, again, a shoe pocket system that you would adhere to a door, or you certainly could secure to a wall. But making your own, again, can be tricky, and a lot of these engineered felts are meant for drainage and, again, that air circulation issue that we talked about also. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see a lot more in the coming years on do-it-yourself and very affordable selection of opportunities.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Doug in Appleton, we turn to you next. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for calling.
I had some information on peach trees.
Oh, okay.
And I'm up in Appleton, and I had one for a good 8-9 years, a couple of them actually. And the two varieties that work best in Wisconsin are the Reliant and then the Madison, which is a hybrid out of UW-Madison.
Mm-hmm.
I preferred the taste of the Reliant, but I'd get full-size peaches. Some years it's just too many peaches actually. And the trick is to keep it out of the north and the west wind, and also plant it around 7 feet. And actually, I had probably mine 15 feet from the house, but you get radiant heat from the house.
Yep.
And that really helps the peaches. I had one tree that was real close to the house, and then one that was actually I had transplanted it after a couple of years because it overgrew the spot into the middle of the yard. And the closest tree, it would produce fruit a full month before the other tree.
Oh.
And they're all self-pollinating, too.
Wow. Well, that's really good advice. And frankly, what often happens, I think, with peaches is that you might go 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and then there's a hard winter.
Yep.
And there goes the peach tree.
Then we lose it, yeah. And we ran into a leaf curl, so we would spray for that, each year. And then, of course, when they start producing fruit, you get the raccoons and squirrels and everything coming in and getting them. So you have to put some barriers up. But, yeah, we had a fruit borer that went in there, and then, yeah, we had a hard winter, and then we lost it. So that's probably about the span, a good 8 years or so.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it.
Certainly.
Yeah, appreciate that call. So varieties Reliant and Madison were ones that Doug from Appleton had some luck with, and sounds like pretty good luck for the most part. We have Virginia in Janesville wants to know, Mark, when the Rotary Gardens heirloom sale is this year. She's hoping it's earlier than usual. Do you, off the top of your head, know when the sale is?
Yes, I do. Our spring sale is May 12th and 13th, which is Mother's Day weekend. Although our members can come to a pre-sale on Friday the 11th, and every day it's from 9 to 4, And if people are interested, they can get on our website, and we have all our veggie lists, heirloom tomatoes, bell peppers, herbs. Everything will be on our website shortly, and it's a great fundraiser that also supports my exorbitant salary. So please please come and visit the gardens. Good time of year to see our bulbs, too. So we do hope to see lots of people coming by.
Okay, and again, it's the May 12th and 13th.
Correct.
Excellent. Mike from Mequon wonders if you've heard of rain gutter gardening. They actually plant in the gutters. He saw it done in Alaska.
My talk on vertical gardening, I included some shots of gutter gardening. And the gutters themselves weren't in place as you standardly would see on a structure. They were actually used and adhered onto the side of a house or a barn and also stacked with cable, meaning different layers of gutters on top of each other with some distance.
Uh-huh.
The issue with the gutter gardening is making sure you use plants that are fairly shallow rooted because you only get 3 or 4 inches of soil space. But it's very effective and takes up a lineal amount of space, very little width. And the examples that I saw doing the best were spring greens. The idea of all the different types of salads and other types of greens don't need a lot of soil, and it was a prime location to grow these things. So gutter gardening, and if people get online and Google that or look it up, you'll see all sorts of neat examples on repurposed materials for this vertical type gardening.
Yeah, and then how do you harvest?
Well, that's the thing. The way they were located, again, in this cable system, they were within reach.
Okay.
So all the examples I saw were within reach.
All right. Chris in Green Bay, we're on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just returned from a wonderful trip to Chile and Peru, and one of the things that I saw in, I believe it was Santiago, Chile, was, I guess, vertical growth. Maybe it was called a living wall, but it was an external wall, the upper half of an external wall of a mall. And it was squares of different plants in a quilt or patchwork sort of arrangement, maybe 18-inch squares. So they must have been in some kind of a grid work and then in a piece of sod or something. And it seemed that they were watered from the roof because we could see water dripping down into the plants across the roof and then down, so you kind of had to stay away from it so you didn't get it on your head. It was just gorgeous, and I'd never seen anything like it before. So if you can imagine various shades of green all in a patchwork design.
Oh.
Wow, that sounds neat. And those living walls, there's essentially two ways they're done. And the way you may have observed is there are systems that are set in place. They're modular sections that the plants are grown first, and then these sections are adhered vertically or connected. They contain soil, so there's a lot of weight and a lot of issue with maintaining drainage and the plants themselves. A lot of these other systems we're seeing over in Europe and now on our West Coast are systems that they're soilless. They're essentially hydroponics, where these plants will root into an engineered felting, and it's constant drip irrigation of nutrient water. So the water and nutrients drain down consistently, and the plants are quite happy, and that's minus the soil weight then on the building itself. So it's so nice to see these things, and I mentioned earlier the engineering with making sure the weight is accommodated with these, I think, is there. The science is there.
Yeah.
I may be able to put a picture up later today on your Facebook page. I'm driving right now, so I can't do it this minute. But
I was just going to ask you.
Yeah.
Please do that, Chris, if you have a chance. We would love to see it.
Sure, I'd be happy to.
All right, thanks. Thanks very much for that comment and the question. And while you're there, by the way, you might guess, too, as because of the 100th anniversary of the Henry Vilas Zoo, we're having a little contest here. We're going to have some zoo folks with us on Monday, so we're having a little fun with us. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And guess what animal they may be bringing with them? They're going to bring an animal. We're pretty sure we know what it is. We're not positive. So, but we'll know. There'll be something here. And please comment to the status that Judith posted with a big question mark as the picture. Post your comment there so we don't clog the page up too much for people looking for information. And if there's more than one correct answer, we'll do a random drawing for a great prize. And the animal they have in mind springing will be really cool if that can work out. I'm hoping that it'll work out. And join in now with a question at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Bonnie in Weyerhaeuser, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling just to comment on some interesting living wall that a harmonist community used to practice in the early 1800s in a little tiny town called New Harmony in southwestern Indiana. These people were very resourceful, and they would plant grapevines alongside their houses, and the grapevines would climb up on supports, on trellises, and they didn't put any rain gutters on their houses, and then the rain would just trickle down into the grapevines. And what was so amazing about this is that that's a very moist area, and yet they didn't have termite issues because of the way they built their houses, and they also had fabulous grapes.
Oh, sounds good, Mark.
A great way to do it. And in the term vertical gardening, a lot of us start thinking it really means a lot of different things, and that's a perfect example of another meaning, and that's the opportunity of growing vines or other plants in a narrow space. And at Rotary Gardens here, we have some large brick walls on the side of our visitor center that are really bereft of any interest. So we've built vining structures to host these colorful vines that offer not only something interesting on this background, but also brings the scale of the structure down. And I think those grapes on that house are doing double duty. They're not only providing produce, they're also helping cool the home, and that's a great way of reusing the water off the roof. And again, vines on buildings can be effective, although there are concerns about more aggressive vines that tend to adhere to buildings or
yeah.
create problems, like ivies and some of the others. So, you know, be wary of some of the dangerous types.
That's great. Thank you, Bonnie.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. Terry in Fredonia, it's your turn. Hi, Terry.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for calling.
You know, I just did something that I thought was kind of interesting. I did a vertical garden using a picture frame, and then I built a wooden piece behind it and put a mesh on the bottom. And then I was able to put moss in the bottom of that, or not moss, but, you know, just something to kind of hold the soil in. Put the soil in, and then I was able to do succulents on the top of that, as well as some moss. And I think when you do something like that, you have to let it sit for a couple of weeks just to take root, but then you can hang it on the wall. And it's really quite beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah, that's I've seen the same thing done, and that's such a neat way of doing it. And as you described, using an old picture frame, and you're dead on in terms of making sure the plants establish. And what you just described, I've also observed with succulents, which also don't need a lot of water. So the idea of starting some of these vertical opportunities in a horizontal fashion, planting them, letting them establish, and then flipping them vertical and adhering them to a surface, I think is effective, and it's such a nice touch and very tasteful. But again, remember those plants have an expectation of proper care and sunlight and that sort of thing for those that want to try this opportunity. But I can envision exactly what you're describing, and I'm sure it turned out quite nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's really beautiful, but there's another one that I saw that I haven't tried yet. Taking a wooden pallet and then putting some kind of porous material behind the pallet and underneath each space, and then you can set that pallet up on, you know, even in an apartment on a porch,
mm-hmm.
And you can grow vegetables and hanging plants out of that as well. And it doesn't take up a lot of space, but you have several different layers using that pallet.
Well, the pallet planter idea, if anyone's interested, take a look at my gardening blog. If you get on the Rotary Gardens website, there's a link to my blog, and I've shown pictures of us over the past 2 weeks developing pallet planters. So I was excited to hear you say that. And we generate 150, 200 pallets here each year with things coming into the gardens. And instead of them being churned up into subpar wood chips that no one wants, why not use them for something like this? So it's nice that you mentioned that, and I would encourage people to Google it or, again, look at my blog and see how we're doing this. It's going to be a fun opportunity.
Absolutely. And, Terry, if you've got any photos from what you've done, we'd love to put them up on our Facebook page.
Oh, you know what? I'll do that. I'm actually on the road to La Crosse right now, and when I get to a computer, I'll take some photos and get those up a little bit later.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your great show.
Appreciate it very much. You can join in, too. We have open lines. Get you on pretty quickly now at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Someone on our Facebook page asked about their four-year-old trumpet vine. The trumpet vine hasn't flowered yet after 4 years, and they're wondering if there's any hope, Mark.
Oh, it'll flower. The trumpet vines, I've seen them flowering younger than that, so the concern would be, why isn't it flowering? And trumpet vines don't need really ultra-rich soil. So I've seen the best trumpet vines I've seen blooming are in poorer soils. And the comment with richer soils is that they'll put a lot of growth into leaf development.
Yeah.
So I would just be patient with it, but be wary because trumpet vine is extremely vigorous.
Yeah.
It'll pull down light poles. I mean, it's crazy, and it also sends out root runners that'll poke up here and there. So as beautiful as it is, and the hummingbirds love it, gorgeous vine, but a kind of a thug once it gets going. So be wary and make sure you provide proper support, but it'll bloom in time.
Judith in Madison, it's your turn. Hello.
Hi. I was when you talk about vertical gardening, it made me think of espaliered fruit trees, where trees are trellised up a framework up the side of a building, and it takes advantage of the heat that the bricks absorb to help the trees the fruit ripen more quickly. I saw them at Longwood Gardens in Delaware and also in England. And that would also be a good use, especially in our climate.
Absolutely, and that's a perfect example of using what could be a very tight amount of space, but also double duty from the structure, and you alluded to radiant heat, and the gentleman earlier talked about peaches being close to the house, and we don't take full use of some of that radiant heat, which does create little microclimates around our home. But the espalier-type approach, again, is something that was very popular in Europe, and I've seen it here. At Rotary Gardens, we have an apple tree on the side of our visitor center that a standard apple tree would be taking up a huge amount of space. This thing is tight up on the wall. It doesn't come even a foot and a half away from the wall and is doing very well for all the reasons you just mentioned. So thank you for mentioning that. Yeah. It is a good opportunity.
Thanks, Judith.
Bye.
Bye. Appreciate the call very much. Talking about vertical growing and edible ornamentals today, among other things, with our guest Mark Dwyer, landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mealer here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll take some more calls now, and Thomas in Manitowoc, I believe, is next. So let's go there. Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling.
Hi, I was just wondering, in these seed catalogs, they have a lot of new ornamental berries that are edible, and two of them I was wondering about. One is the honeyberries and the ironia. I just wondered if you had tasted any of those and wondered if they were worthwhile.
I have not. Have you, Mark?
The aronia I have tasted. Now, I'll say honeyberry, I'm not sure what that is. I would need to know the Latin. But, you know, when you think of taste on anything, whether it's a berry or any type of food, taste is subjective. So it's one of those things, we all have our favorites. But, again, honeyberry, not familiar with. But aronia is either a black or a red chokeberry. And they tend to be fairly bitter. They are edible. Birds love them as well. But again, I think be wary of some of the catalog descriptions, because they'll use little phrases that'll make you think that all of these are universally delicious. But flavor can vary year to year. It can vary depending on soil types and how the plant's growing. So your best bet is talk to people who actually have grown these and tasted them, and, you know, get a verbal opinion from someone. The aronias are hardy for us, and they're a beautiful shrub that also has a great fall color. So there's a lot of merit in a plant that also serves double duty as being an ornamental, as part of our topic for today.
All right. Thank you very much, Thomas, for calling. Jane in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a comment for the woman who has small children and roving cats.
Yes.
And how to keep both of them from destroying the plants. I've never had a problem. I've been raising kids for 25 years and always have had cats, and they're always out in the garden with me. So, first of all, just to reassure her that generally they're, neither of them are an issue unless there's a nice edible tomato that you don't want touched, then you just want to cover it up. I found with cats, if you don't have a lot of open soil, they're not likely to relieve themselves in it. And what I did was cover the soil with some netting of some sort. And also squirt guns with lemon juice really help a lot with the cats. Mm-hmm. You aim for the hind quarters and it doesn't hurt them at all, but they remember that. So they're very trainable. I have a question. And that is, I have not had luck with blueberries. And you said that if I put acid in the soil, they might do better. How do I do that?
Well, the trick with acidifying soil, it takes a lot of work, and there's some ways of slightly acidifying the soil, but the issue with pH for blueberries is they really prefer a pH below 6.0, which is quite acidic to start with.
Yeah, their range for Milwaukee, that's not very...
Yeah, it'd be difficult because, again, you want an ideal pH between 4.5 and 6 for blueberries. Here in Janesville, we're neutral, and for us to get soil acidified, we're doing things like adding some peat moss, some shredded oak leaves are slightly acidic, pine needles, but that brings the pH down so marginally, we've been starting to use a slow-release sulfur product that also helps acidify the soil but requires frequent application. So to be honest, we've given up on significant pH changes, and we don't do blueberries here because of that, and our rhododendrons, which also like acid, aren't doing the best either. So I would talk to, again, an extension agent and see if they have some ideas, because the other thought is growing blueberries in containers,
Actually
starting getting your own soil mix going and doing it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's probably a lot more doable than trying to amend your soil.
Okay, very good. I love your show. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Jane, for calling. Appreciate it. Joel in Merrill, hello to you.
How are we doing?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Yep. I had a question. My wife wanted a garden, so I ended up building her a raised garden, but I used treated lumber. And how much trouble I am by using treated versus just regular straight lumber?
Well, with the treated lumber, I understand the reasons for using it, longevity and such. When we've built raised beds with treated lumber, we've lined them with plastic. And the way they're treating lumber nowadays, to my understanding, is nothing like 20 or 30 years ago. So there's not the issue of leaching a lot of bad chemicals, particularly for veggies and such. So I guess I don't know the best answer for that. Larry, maybe someone has some experience with those types of constructions and what works and what doesn't.
Well, I think the idea of using plastic liners is something that a lot of people do. And I've heard the same thing about, and I honestly couldn't tell you what chemicals are being used now to treat that wood, but I know that there's much less worry about it now than, say, 20 years ago. So I would, if it was me, I would just line it with plastic.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling. Diane in Oshkosh. Hi.
Hello. I had two comments. At our local garden tour, not last year, but the year before, there was a lady who had succulents all over, and they were just gorgeous. Like, as you came up to her porch, she had them planted in picture frames, and they were every different color and type of them. And then as you went around to her backyard, she had even a Queen Anne's chair decked out in them, and a tea table. And then again, she had her bird bath full of them with a statue in it. It was just gorgeous.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And As far as vertical gardens, I'm in an apartment after being in a house with a gorgeous garden for 35 years. And so I've had to go vertical with trellises. And this last year I did peppers and cucumbers and tomatoes and herbs and everything else. But I think my problem is there's not enough light. And I don't know if there's certain plants that would do better without full sun all day long.
Well, the trick with a situation like that is if you're intent on vegetable growing, you do start to become limited with your lack of sunlight. You get stretchy plants that are really looking for that light. So I know salad greens don't need as much light as many of our traditional vegetables, but, you know, the tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, they really do prefer full light. I always appreciate going by apartment complexes and looking up on the balconies, and you can tell the true gardeners based on those that have the plants outside. It's just a shame you don't have the light that you need. I did want to comment. Herbs, sure.
Sorry.
Yeah, a lot of the herbs will do well. Again, it's an issue of trying to put them in the best position and and hoping for the best.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You were going to comment. You had another comment to make.
I thought the succulent comment was neat, and people should know that there are a lot of hardy succulents that we can grow in Wisconsin that offer that nice look, although in the horticultural world, development in available succulents is crazy. It's unbelievable how many you can obtain, although be wary because many are not hardy and can be used as seasonals and then brought in as houseplants.
Yeah.
And particularly out on the west coast and the southwest of our country, the developments in these succulents is amazing, and they love our summers. But again, hardiness is an issue. But that I wish I could have been on your trip to see that garden that you described.
Yeah.
Well, this year, if you're up in Oshkosh, the first two weekends in March, the Payne Art Garden and Art Museum has their blooms garden rooms,
uh-huh.
And every room is full of plants that kind of mimic the art on the wall, and they're just gorgeous. And then they have like a huge room set up as different dining areas that are all plants.
Everything
has to be plants.
Neat. And
that sounds great.
And for those that haven't visited the Payne Art Center and Garden, it's wonderful. I've been there many times, and I hope people make it a destination.
Thank you, Diane.
Alrighty, have a great day.
Yeah, you as well. Have a great weekend. Joan in Green Bay. Turning to you now. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. I bought a hibiscus tree in a pot in the early summer, and then I repotted it into a larger container, and I had it outside, but then when the weather got cold, I brought it inside and put it in front of a window. Well, it is going like crazy. It's soon it'll be to the ceiling. Do I cut it back? Do I let it go? Or what do I do?
Well, I guess short of removing your ceiling and letting it go up another level, you can cut those back. And it sounds like it's very happy. And just track some of those stems down to where you have a good junction of little branchlets and go ahead and give it a haircut. It'll be fine, and you can take it out again in summer. You might find as it gets larger and larger as you bring it inside and out, you may have to do some more severe pruning. But I've never seen them respond in a bad way from that as long as they're happy. So go ahead and snip away. They'll be okay.
And is it possible to get them to bloom inside?
Well, the blooming is an issue also with day length and the amount of sunlight they're receiving. So the answer would be yes, but the bloom time would probably correspond to some point in summer where you've observed it. Did you observe it blooming outside earlier?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Right. You probably won't see much for winter bloom, but once we get some longer days, you'll start to see some buds forming. And it'll, again, it sounds like you're doing everything right.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
All right,
Joan. Thank you.
Yeah, Joan, thank you. And Dave in Cobb, your turn. Hi, Dave.
Yes. Am I on?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, good morning to you. I've got a grapevine that's attached to my garage, and I've got a chicken house that's attached to the same garage. And the grapevine just covers the whole hen house and garage. You know, just gone wild. And I was just wondering, what do I do to... I'd like to have some grapes off it, and wanting to know what to...
Yeah. Something we're right next to a chicken house. You probably got a lot of nitrogen fertilizer in the ground right there, Mark, and that's what's leading to all the foliage.
Right. It sounds like it's liking the soil so much it's putting a lot of foliar growth. And, you know, grapevines, you know, people will see standard orchards and they think grapevines are 4 to 5 feet tall and always trained on guy wires. The wild grapes we have at Rotary Gardens are going 80 feet up trees, you know, so grapes can be extremely vigorous. And if those originally were varieties that had produced fruit and they're currently not producing fruit, as Larry mentioned, there's probably something going on with the soil. And you may want to do some severe cutting back and maybe incorporate some other varieties or try them in a different location.
Yeah, and there's a good publication from UW Extension called Growing Grapes in Wisconsin. You can find it at the UW Extension Learning Store. It's a nice little publication. It's free and gives a lot of good information on caring for grapevines. And I hope you'll take a look at it, Dave. Our guest today, Mark Dwyer. Mark is landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville, here on Garden Talk, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today. As we talk about vertical growing and edible ornamentals and other gardening issues with Mark Dwyer, he is the landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Great guy, and he knows an awful lot. And it's always fun to have him with us, not only to talk about plants, but to talk about the Rotary Garden itself in Janesville. It's a wonderful place. I hope you have a chance to visit it. And, Mark, you have a nice website as well.
Yes, we do. If people are interested in seeing what's going on at the gardens, and I should say, it's an open invitation for everyone to visit. Our mission is to promote horticultural education and appreciation, and we've been around for 23 years now. Our website is www.rotarybotanicalgardens, all one word, .org. And I mentioned earlier I have a daily gardening blog that's linked to that website, and I talk about what's blooming, what's going on today. Like snow removal for us, but some of the other exciting things that are occurring here at the gardens.
And if you didn't get that address, we also have a link to it on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you're up on my Facebook page anyway, just go and you can link right there, click on it, and you'll go right to it. Albert in South Milwaukee has a comment or question. Let's go to him. Hi, Albert.
Good afternoon. Mark, I'd like to know if you can recommend any types of plants that could be grown around the entrances of a home that would repel noxious insects. Also, plants that might be grown along the base of a house to repel rodents.
Hmm.
Boy, that's a great question, and I wish I had a good answer for you, because, you know, the issue with various insects and various rodents getting into our homes and causing damage is something that's on all of our minds. I don't have a good answer for you. And when you think of insect repellents, there's a lot of citronella-based products, lemony-scented type plants that tend to deter mosquitoes and some other insects. But again, I don't have a good answer for you there. I wonder if Extension would have some information for you regarding that.
Yeah,
tough to keep everything away. In a lot of cases where there's issues of rodents or insects trying to get into the home, making sure your home's secure in terms of entry, but also the use of various mulches and other products around the home might either encourage or discourage, access issues.
Yeah,
it's been my experience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, mulch oftentimes is works against you in a situation like that.
Are you familiar with a plant called tansy for repelling flies and insects and rodents?
Yes, tansy is considered an herb. It's a vigorous plant, beautiful flowers, tends to spread a lot. But I have heard that, the idea that would dissuade various insects. And when I mentioned the citronella-type scents, there are scented geraniums that are said to be mosquito repellents. And I've had neighbors who will pot a whole bunch of these up and put them around their back patio to some degree of success.
although the other neighbor has the bug zapper, which is, you know, the other the other end of the spectrum. So, you know, I wish you luck, but I don't have a lot of personal experience with deterring those. I have some of the same issues that it sounds like you have.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Maybe somebody else will have some advice on this as well. Liz in Dodgeville up next. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I have two questions, if that's okay.
Sure.
The first question is, I have a large area of stinging nettles and kind of a shady area where there's an old springhouse spring, and I'd want to get rid of them but plant something that would be frog-friendly. And then the second question is, are there any attractive perennial flowers that I can plant this spring that will be blooming about late August when we're having an event at our place?
Well, two good questions. Now, stinging nettle is a native plant, and it does like partly shaded locations. The issue with stinging nettle is that the best time to remove it is when it just comes out of the ground, because it doesn't have the stinging properties quite yet. In fact, stinging nettle is actually an edible plant at the younger stages of its life, but I've had the experience of grabbing mature stinging nettle, and that's something you never forget.
No.
And I never advocate herbicide usage unless it's needed, but stinging nettle, there's probably a lot of seeds in that soil as well, so by either spraying or hoeing those out or removing them, you're still in for many years of dealing with the seedlings. So my concern is, if you visually remove what's there and put in good things, you'll still have the nettle to contend with. Depending on your lighting and soil, there's all sorts of other types of plants that would do well, and I would look into other native plants that would certainly be frog-friendly and be good in those wetter environments. Now, the timing for your perennial blooming in August, bloom times for plants are difficult to predict because it depends how the season goes. And my concern with you purchasing something new and hoping it'll bloom in August, even if it has that window, is kind of a crapshoot. So you may want to focus on seasonal plants. If you're interested in a certain color or texture, get some really good seasonal plants going that will fill your interest or what your expectation. And in August, that's when the seasonals are doing very well. And if it's a wedding or something of that nature, you have instant color instead of being nervous all summer waiting for something to bloom. That may bloom early, it may bloom later, it may not bloom at all. So
yeah.
Tough to say.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Liz. Probably, I wonder if it's a wedding. I should have asked.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it.
Yeah, Delaine in Manitowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Delaine. Delaine, are you there? Oh, maybe we lost. And we lost her. Let's go to Diane in Chippewa Falls. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I would like some information about bamboo. I know there's some that is hardy for this area, and I have a source where I can get some free because someone has some they're willing to give up. But I was wondering how invasive it is, what size it gets to, and I do have a bunch of nettle that I would like to get rid of, and will it beat the nettle away?
Yeah.
Well, bamboo is one of the most important economic grasses in the world. It's actually a grass. In our climate, bamboo is very tricky, despite the fact that many will be promoted as hardy. And it sounds like you may have a source where it's growing in your area.
I do, yes.
Okay. Well, for us at Rotary Gardens, bamboo, we have none of it left, simply because it's never looked real good. It's not like what you would see out in California or Florida, where you have these huge bamboo groves. We've never had anything over 2 or 3 feet tall in terms of bamboo. I would ask some questions about what exactly this bamboo is, because the word bamboo is applied to some other types of plants that look bamboo-ish. So I would make sure it's a true bamboo, but the issue, again, is how they overwinter, because they tend to get very ratty. Bamboos by nature are evergreen, so the issue in our climates is they have to go through winter and they'll be root hardy, but you're counting on new growth every year.
Okay.
I don't think.
And I live out in the country, so it's I would put it in the woods and along the fence line and things
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah.
Does it need to be wet?
Not at all. Actually, bamboo can take a wide range of soils.
And, you know, I would encourage you, if there's any way you could email me a picture, I wouldn't mind taking a look at it, because, again, my concern about what's being called bamboo, if it's something in your area that's growing very well, I question if it truly is bamboo. And a true bamboo would not have the vigor in our climate to overtake the nettles, or, and I've not seen bamboo issues in Wisconsin at all. So, again, it's very marginally hardy, even in the southern portion of the state. So I would do a little more research.
Yeah, there is something that people refer to as bamboo, though, that is very invasive.
Well, there's something called, they call it Japanese bamboo, and it's a polygonum. It's in the Persicaria grouping of plants that is extremely vigorous. And it has jointed stems, so it looks like bamboo, but it has rounded leaves. It looks nothing like a grass in terms of leaves. So, again, don't hesitate to send me a picture or show it to an extension agent, because, you know what you're planting before you plunk it in.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And speaking of pictures, Judith has posted one of her favorite living wall garden in Paris. And there's a great photo of his beautiful building with the plants growing on the walls. So it's a living wall garden. Go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you will see it. It's just beautiful. We have Chuck in Wausau coming up next here. Hi, Chuck. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Larry. I've been listening to you since you did the Victory Gardens World War II. Hey, I got a couple of comments, okay?
Okay.
I'm a retired architect.
Okay.
And the first thing, never let a city boy buy a farm with a rototiller and a tractor. The 10x10 garden goes to 30x150. But anyway, I've done some square foot gardening. A couple weeks ago, you were talking to a guy about putting a square foot garden underneath or close to his house.
Yep.
He's got to watch the drip line from the roof.
Yep.
Because it's going to turn up stones and all the stuff that's in the garden and wash out the seeds. Okay. The second, and the raised garden from the guy in Merrill.
Yep.
I've done this before for handicap accessibility. You know, raise them up 3 feet so the wheelchair can get underneath.
Yep.
There's a lot of lumber cutters up in Merrill, sawmills. He can get free, just about free, rough sawn edge boarding. The life expectancy is probably 5 to 6 years. And at that point in time, you got to renew the soil anyway. Okay, so it's a consideration.
Yeah, something else. Yeah, something to think about.
Right. The other thing is on your, when we did the raised beds for the handicap.
Yes.
Accessible. We also did the gutter. If you imagine an oversized sawhorse that's like 6 foot high.
Okay.
And take 4 foot gutters and place them going up so they all get the sunlight. It's easier for the people to reach horizontally, you know, off the side of the wheelchair to pick the lettuce, pick the radishes, put some nice marigolds on top and everything like that. And the last thing is the guy with the insects and
yes,
gophers around his house.
Yep.
Try Milorganite.
Oh, yeah. That's not a bad idea either. Milorganite would...
Once it gets wet, nobody wants to be around the house. Thanks, guys. Great. Every week I do this.
Thanks, Chuck. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Oh, that's great. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. We have some open lines here. Jenny also sent a note on our Facebook page saying that savory repels flies. So, I don't know if have you heard that one, Mark?
I've not heard that. I wonder, did she specify winter savory or summer savory?
She did not.
Okay, because they're two very popular herbs, and that would be interesting to know that. And as a side note, we're selling both of those at our spring plant sale, oddly enough.
Oh, all right. So, well, there you go. And again, let's go back over that. What's the timing on that?
It's May 12th and 13th, 9 a.m. till 4 p.m. at the Rotary Gardens Horticulture Center. And on our website, there's information on what plants we'll be offering. And for Rotary Gardens Friends members, they can come to a pre-sale on Friday the 11th and get first crack at everything.
Yeah, there you go. And that's an easy one for me to remember. My birthday is May 14th. So
excellent.
I was born on Mother's Day, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
What a gift for Mom, eh?
Yes.
let's go to Pat in Duluth, Minnesota. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I'm calling about the woman who spoke of her stinging nettle issue.
Yes.
And I just wanted to say that if there was a spot that she could keep those nettles in that wouldn't be problematic for her, they're wonderful host plants for several of our local butterflies.
Oh.
And so they're so used by them. So she'd find lots of neat caterpillars on the in those patches.
Oh. That's something I didn't know.
Yeah,
great point. And yeah, as again, as a native plant, it gets a bad rap for its defense mechanisms, but it's not a bad plant for wildlife.
Yeah. Right. Like she'd see red admirals and Milbert's tortoiseshells and many other butterflies. So if you can spare a little patch, it's really worth it.
Oh, thanks, Pat.
Okay, well, thanks for your show. We always love this program.
Well, love that you listen. Thank you very much. Gary and Maribel, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I'm wondering what I can do to grow decent dahlias. Some years I grow spectacular dinner plate dahlias, and other years I can barely get a flower. How do I get them off to a good start, or do I have to start them in a greenhouse or under a window or something?
Well, great questions, because there's really nothing more beautiful than a dahlia in bloom, and we grow many here at the gardens, including the dinner plate size and a lot of the dark leaf varieties and dwarf varieties. We do get an early start on all our dahlias, and we don't have greenhouses per se, but we have some connections where we can get these started in at least 70-degree heat, and we start our dahlias in late March. So we obtain them as the tuber, the root structure, and get them started quite early. And the trick for us has been not only putting them in rich soil with lots of watering, because as they grow quickly, you need to make sure adequate water is provided, never let them dry out. But we don't plant our dahlias outside till early June, when soil temperatures are quite warm. I think too many people put dahlias out too early in May, where the ground is still quite damp and can be still very cool, and that tends to stunt their growth. So we're not shy about keeping our dahlias in their starter containers, keeping lots of sunlight, again, the warmth. We'll bring them inside and out as we get through late April into May. And then we finally, again, direct plant the potted dahlias in early June. And we've had a lot of success.
My question is, do you take them out of the pot, or do you plant the whole pot into the ground when you're ready to do it?
We consider it a potted plant. We obviously slide everything out of the pot, but it's set enough roots that it's essentially, we're just digging a hole and putting that whole product right into the ground.
Okay. And the in and out is the hardening them off to get them used to the outside temperature.
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
There you go.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. And Catherine in Milwaukee, turning to you now. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, hello. I would like to discourage anyone from growing tansy because it's an invasive species. I've been working with the Conservation District in Iron Mountain, Michigan, and if too much tansy gets in a pasture and livestock eat that, it can kill them.
So it's toxic. It's an invasive and toxic as well.
Yes, it's very pretty. It's really pretty, but I would like to discourage anyone from growing that.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it does drops a lot of seed, so good comment.
Yeah, thank you very much, Catherine, for calling. Pete has an idea for creating vertical pockets. He says pool liner, a heavy, thick felt fabric used to line the hole for a garden pond against sharp rocks and roots might be great. What do you think of that?
It sounds like that may work. Yeah, it's interesting to see what people have done for their own home approaches to vertical gardening, because we've talked about various products that are out there, various containers and wall-mounted systems and such, that you can purchase. But people with a limited space or opportunities have been doing this for a long time, and I think it'd be interesting to see some of these kind of home remedies to solve the problem.
Yeah, and it does, it comes in 12-foot widths, and you can find it at a whole variety of stores. So it might be worth a look.
Mm-hmm.
Might be worth a look. We have some more callers online. Deborah and Brown Deer, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi.
I just want to say, as a gift for donating to public radio, 2 years ago I chose the Janesville Rotary Garden calendar, and I was just simply amazed that there was such a garden in Wisconsin. And so when I heard that your guest was going to be the landscaper from there, I can't tell you. I wanted to move to Janesville and volunteer my services for free for as long as you needed me. I just love gardening, and I just think you have a wonderful facility. But I wonder, do you still need volunteers? And I volunteered at Villa Terrace, if you're familiar.
Oh, sure, over in Milwaukee. Yes. Oh, thank you for the comments, and I can assure all the listeners that we didn't prearrange this, and there was
no
exchange of money. well, thank you for your comments, and it really, what you saw on the calendar and what you would see on our website and on my blog are a testament to 23 years of intense volunteerism, and not only is the community of Janesville embrace the garden, but the entire Rock County area, and in terms of a botanic garden and pursuing our mission, there's no way we would look anything like we do without so many wonderful volunteers. And as I speak, I have a dozen volunteers here today doing indoor work and other opportunities. And I kudos to everyone who volunteers anywhere, including your local botanic gardens. But understand, our state is very rich in other gardens. Olbrich up in Madison, yeah. Burner over in Hales Corners. I mentioned the Payne Art Center and Museum, Green Bay Botanic. There's the Fox Cities Botanic Garden near Appleton. Lots of great places to visit, and majority of these are nonprofits and could benefit from your visitation and your support. So thank you again for your comments.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Deborah. And boy, are you absolutely right, Mark. I visited, I think, every one of the gardens you've mentioned, and they're all wonderful in their own way. They all have some unique contributions to make.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We have an email from Stephanie. My father has given me a seed pod from a Dutchman's pipe vine that grows on the outside of his Victorian home in northeastern Pennsylvania. I live here in Madison, wondering how to start this, if it'll grow here, and what you might know about it. So the Dutchman's pipe vine.
Well, Dutchman's pipe is more than hardy. It's a woody vine, meaning it'll refoliate on its old growth. In terms of starting the seed, I'd have to say do a little internet research on how to do that. I'm not sure if you have to soak it or scarify the seed, meaning scrape it or nick it, but it's a wonderful vine. It can take a lot of shade. You'll see it on older homes along the front porch to help provide shade. It has huge heart-shaped leaves. The warning that comes with some of my comments is that it's extremely vigorous once it gets established, and I have one in my backyard along a chain-link fence, and it's embedded itself on the fence, and it actually jumped up to there was a box elder tree, and it worked its way 60 foot up the box elder tree. And again, it's a beautiful vine, but as I said earlier about trumpet vine, this is one that once it gets established needs really adequate supports. And but years and years of pleasure, and it's subtropical in appearance. Again, look on the internet and look at some images and see how beautiful it really is in leaf. Flowers are hard to notice and a little, they're very neat, but not as noticeable, obviously, as the leaves. But a good vine, and I wish you luck with starting it.
Oh, that's wonderful. And Mark, always a great pleasure to have you with us. And I'm hoping you can come back soon again. I want to direct people to the RotaryBotanicalGardens.org website. There's lots of information about things that are going on at the gardens, and also obviously the plant sale that's May 12th and 13th this year, and probably a good time to go and visit the garden anyway, and then maybe pick some plants up. Thanks again, Mark. A great pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Mark Dwyer is the landscape manager at the Rotary Gardens in Janesville. Great guy, too. Monday, Vilas Park Zoo representatives will be here. Go to my Facebook page under that big question mark that Judith posted and guess the animal they're bringing. We'll have a wonderful prize for you. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network.